This is the ColoradoHockey.com podcast brought to you by AvsFam, AVSFAM, for the coolest hockey shirts you can't find anywhere else because they're only available online at AvsFam. Check out the Dutchie, the Landy, the EJ, the Picks, the Byerly, the Skilly, and every other shirt, every other hat, every other sticker. They're all awesome. You're awesome. Get together, make more awesome. There hasn't been a whole lot to be excited about since the Colorado Avalanche exited stage left when it came to the playoffs, but there is some good news on the horizon, and it comes in the form of JT Compher. That's Joseph Taylor Compher, by the way, if you wondered. Michigan had what many considered to be the best line in collegiate hockey, and with two of JT Compher's buddies, line mates, already signing with NHL teams, I imagine it was a pretty easy decision for him. Compher, Connor, and Mott will all see each other again as they play for the U.S. the Worlds next month, but after that, it's all NHL, baby. So to say that we know a lot about JT Compher would be a lie, and everything that we do know came from a podcast or an article that somebody else wrote. But luckily, we do know a guy who knows a thing or two about JT Compher, and we talk a little hockey while we're at it. Behold the powerful Richard Pollock.
Okay, so JT Compher is just he's a two-way forward. He's got great work ethic. He's got great hockey IQ. He's got greatness. He's got great vision, great puck control. He's basically a guy who makes people around him look good. He's all about winning. Obviously, he wore the C with Michigan, so he's just all about winning. You know, doesn't enjoy losing. Obviously, no one does. JT Compher, he lives like 15 minutes away from my house, so I know a couple people that know him personally, and they've skated with him, they've played with him, and they say he's just a great all around player. He's just a hard worker. He's always working, and he's also a locker room voice, and that's why he wore the C. So he's constantly talking in the locker room, on the ice, talking to players, and just trying to get everyone on the same level he's on, which is great for the Avalanche.
So, can you think of a player in the league at all who he kind of compares to as far as style or the way that he plays or sees the game?
Yeah, sure. I think I've heard AJ Haefeli talk and say Ryan Callahan, I think he said a couple months ago. So that's okay. A pretty good one. Maybe like even a Jordan Staal type guy, a two-way player, or even a throwback like Chris Drury. I mean, he's like the same exact height. He's a righty, he's American. He's going to get more assists than goals. So, I mean, that's a pretty good comparison as well.
I was going to ask you that, if he's a shoot first or a pass first kind of guy. And I was actually just peeking at stats, and he appears to be a pass first kind of guy.
Yes. Yeah.
I'd be curious to see if he's got a good shot though.
He's got a great shot as well. I mean, what I think in his mind is before he shoots the puck is maybe if I could get this around to someone else, see if they have a better angle to shoot on or, you know, create more opportunity. But if he sees an open shot, he'll take it, and he's actually got a really good shot.
I mean, when it works, it's great, right? Think Tanguay in his prime. I mean, this guy could basically pass the puck around the goalie and find whatever it takes and get it past the line. But then he kind of lost a step a little bit, and maybe the vision or maybe the players around him weren't there. But it sounds like this guy's got a little bit quicker trigger, which I think would have helped Tanguay throughout the years. And hopefully he brings with him to Compher anyways.
Yeah. And plus, I think a question mark for JT Compher was the obvious of the NHL speed. And I actually think this last season he played, he had some pretty good speed. He looks pretty good out there. And I mean, the only thing he really needs to work on is just bulk up more, kind of like what Nathan MacKinnon kind of needed to do, where he just build more muscle so he could win board battles and just face guys who are like 6'5 in the NHL. You don't want to get run over.
Right, because he's 21, 6 foot tall, and I think about 185 pounds or something like that, which isn't that big, honestly.
Yeah.
And that's average or the low end of average anymore for an NHL player.
Yeah, it's a high demand of big players like Sean Matthias and, Martinson.
I like Marty, man. I don't know if he's coming back, but I found that guy truly interesting.
I really hope he is.
With that mustache, he grows out every now and then, too.
I mean, I think he'd be a perfect guy to just, you could thrash him. He'll be 26 by the time next season. He's not totally young anymore. He's not like 21 or 22. The thing is, I just don't, I think guys like Rendulich aren't coming back. I don't know if you read the Eurolanch article on Rendulich, the interview.
I haven't.
He just doesn't seem like he enjoyed the AHL anything. I mean, I think he was kind of disappointed he didn't make the roster, but it's so hard to make the NHL, and just, I feel for the guys playing in the AHL. So, I mean, if we could get Marty back for a two-way contract and just have him play a couple of NHL games, I'd be totally happy with that.
Yeah, and for a guy like him, I mean, he's going to have to be a two-way contract, and he's going to have to earn his ice time and his spot on the big team. So that's one where you can't go Everberg about this. You can't come in, you know, play pretty good, get hurt, and come back and not play the physical game. That's what they need from Marty. They need the physical side of his game, and then he'll create opportunities and be in the right place here and there to put a goal in. And I think he's got the hands for that, but we'll see. I mean, there's so many question marks going into next season that I don't even know where to begin.
I don't know where to begin either. This team could change so much over the summer, or we could, I mean, I think the Avalanche are going for a better direction this summer. I think they're going to be trying to sign these guys that, you know, were, that helped the Avalanche from when they acquired them from the trade deadline. I think a guy like Sean Mathias is what Patrick Wall envisions for players to be, you know, a hard worker, big guy, gets the net, you know, just constantly creating opportunity and just makes the younger guys look better.
Right. And everybody's looking at him and Bodker trying to decide who you would sign. And to me, that's just an easy one. I think that Bodker is going to get a lot of money elsewhere, and he may be at the very peak of his performance ability. So if we sign him into a 3-year contract, which is what I imagine he would want, and I think he's looking like close to $6 million or something, which is ridiculous. I don't see us doing that. I think that while he's good, especially if we get somebody like, is it Radulov? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
That guy shows up, I don't know if we're even going to be interested in a Bodker situation, because we're going to have to make decisions given the money we have.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that if Radulov comes, signs for a good price, and then if Bodker's still asking for that $6 million, he's gone. But to be honest, I think that Bodker really enjoyed his time with the Avalanche. I think that he likes playing with players like Nathan MacKinnon, who will get him points. I mean, he wasn't getting too many points in Arizona. So if he took a pay cut and it was a great price and it fit our cap future and stuff like that for a few years, I'd be totally happy with that. And just a guy who contributes and just has a positive attitude. And also, he's still pretty young. I think he's 24.
Really, I thought he was a little bit older. But still, I mean, all the way up until about 28, these guys are kind of in their playing prime. Once they hit 28, it takes you know, a special kind of guy. There's certain guys who stay in their prime for much longer. But just physiology, man, and that's when the body starts breaking down a little bit at this very, very elite league where everything is, you know, magnified. If you're off just a little bit, if you're a half a step off, you're out of the play.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It'll be curious to see what happens, right?
It will be curious to see what happens. And I mean, I do think there's a strong chance that Avalanche can re-sign Bodker, but I also think he might go somewhere else. So that's just a question mark.
I think you make a really good point, though. I think that him and MacKinnon is a good thing, and maybe he's looking at this guy going, look, he's young, he's raw, he's got energy, he's got speed. I mean, they can play a game that other guys can't play because they can keep up with each other. I think for MacKinnon, I mean, I've always thought this about him since he's been with the Avalanche. I think that what he needs is more poise. I can see him getting from one end to the other fast. I see him do it with skill. He's got a whip of a shot he can put on, but he often just, he does this hurry up, kind of freak out moment. I think he needs to hurry up, but every now and then slow it up, have a look around and see where that pass is and not the pass to the defenseman that gets picked off all the time. So I think that they could be good for each other that way. It's a funny thing when you have guys with skill like MacKinnon. He's so fast. It's like, who's going to match the superpower of this guy? Like, who can we bring in who can play with him? Because otherwise he's going to frustrate himself doing that same thing over and over, the wheels all the way down and then the turnover.
Yeah, I think MacKinnon needs to understand that he's a beast on the ice. I mean, he's blown past guys like every game, and he just sometimes I'm like, oh, he's going to take it up and shoot, just get to the net, create opportunity, shoot at the net, and he won't do that. He'll pass back or something. He'll look for Tyson Barrie to pass to, and I think he needs to start learning that he's better than most of these guys on the ice, and I don't know. I do believe he will learn that, and I do think we should have guys that are playing with him that have the same mindset of getting to the net and getting goals and just knowing that they're a great line.
Right. And anytime that you hear people talk about this, it kind of gets sensationalized, this idea of who do we keep, right? And it seems like, well, we probably have to trade one of the core. And I don't know if that's true. I think that Joe Sakic thinks that Patrick Waugh is still worth it and he should get at least one more year try. I think that the management thinks that Sakic is worth it. And so Sakic and Waugh still together. And I think that both of them together are thinking, look, let's stick to our plan, our mission. We're going to have to modify our system a little bit, but let's not mess with our players and our core right now. And let's see if we can do this with what we built. That's
exactly
just kind of how I see it. But
you could look at this team a few years ago and stuff like that. And I mean, with Patrick Waugh in, like, this team has gotten better. Like, no one is going to say that this team has gotten worse. I mean, there's always question marks for the defense, but I just think that we just need to possibly get another defenseman. I mean, we can't be having guys like Bodnarchuk and just playing minutes. Like, you know, they're going to, that's going to create scoring opportunity for the other teams. We need to try to get another top six, maybe top four defenseman, righty or lefty would be perfectly fine. I don't think Boschman could play top line minutes anymore. I think he's more of a second pairing guy, third pairing. So, I mean, we just need to solidify this defense and just stick to the plan. And I mean, we'll be rewarded.
I think so. I think if we're mindful of the amount of time that we put, that somebody like a Boschman spends on the ice, he can be good. I think he's kind of a rookie whisperer in that sense. And I think that, you know, we have him regardless. I think we're spending $4.5 million on him for the next at least 2 years. I can't remember what the contract is. So he's going to be around, and we're going to have to find a way to make him work within the system, kind of like Jágr, right? I mean, Jágr is this amazing dude, but you can't overplay him, because at the end of the day, he's not going to recover as quick as the other guys. That's just the facts.
And Boschman is just basically the defensive captain that we have for our team. He's constantly on the guys that are making sure they don't make mistakes, and he's a great player to have right now. I just think that we need another player similar to Boschman, but, you know, late 20s, early 30s type player that could still skate it up pretty quick and play defensive type game. But that's always hard to find because defensemen are just impossible.
Well, everyone's always looking for a defenseman, right? And if you go with what you're talking about, you're probably looking at a 30-plus guy to bring in somebody, kind of UFA version of it. And then if you're young, man, I mean, you got to really have some good scouting and things have to work out. I mean, there's a lot of guys who look really good where they are right now. But when you change their surroundings and their scenario and how much they travel and what it's like to be on a team and be a rookie all over again, some guys just kind of fizzle. I mean, I think we've seen that with some of the people coming into the league lately that they thought they would be amazing, but there's a bit more of a project on teams' hands than they thought.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff happens. I don't know. I just think that Avalanche, they have the right tools to do it. They just probably need to add a little bit more, and they got to, like, ignore what people are saying, you know. Just I've seen this team. We know what this team could do. We've seen this team very dangerous, and once they start scoring, then it just continues. But we just need to solidify the defense more and then maybe even get more confidence in Barley. And Pickard obviously already has confidence, but just more support for the goalies.
I think so, too. And that's one thing that, I mean, as good as Barley is, he teeters on the edge of being that elite goalie. And I think what holds him up and makes him not truly elite all the time is that he seems to fizzle a little bit in the big games, too. And I don't know if that's just fatigue by the time you get there or if that's the play around him or what. I still believe in the guy, but I think that he might be at the point, too, where they're really going to, you know, this is your chance. I mean, show up or shut up. But we've got another guy who we can put if it came to it. And if a trade came our way where it made really good sense to do it, I mean, they would entertain that thought. I think, I don't think they're going to want to for this next year coming up, but this is going to tell a lot about a lot of our players. If we fizzle out of the gates next year and we're not doing good, I imagine we're going to see some players moved. But before that, I don't think so. I think we're going to do the best we can to spend our money in intelligent ways and then see if Waugh's system can be matured a little bit into something that works for everybody. Because I think Waugh's even gone on record and said, look, I got to change my system. This isn't getting the best out of my players. And that's his job at the end of the day, is to get the best out of what he has.
Exactly. That's totally what they need to do. And I mean, I love Varley and I love Pickard. I think Varley is obviously the number one right now, but we also have to remember that the Las Vegas team is going to be able to choose, and we could only lock in one goalie. So we're either going to lock in a late 20-year-old Semyon Varlamov or an early 20-year-old Calvin Pickard. So by that time, I mean, Varley might even be possibly traded to a team that needs goaltending.
And if we kind of dug in on that, we have two very different goalies, right? We have, I mean, they're both good. There's no doubt about it, right? But Calvin Pickard, he's a guy who never, ever gives up on the play. And he's not quite as gifted when it comes to getting from one side of the net to the other side. I mean, Vardy's push off it's right up there at the very top. It's one of the better parts of his games is his quickness and then that push off that he has from one post to the other one. But, you know, does he get a bit rattled? And is that where Picks has a little bit better poison net? And then, you know, like I said, Picks never gives up, but he's going to have really good defense around him to get to the high levels, I think, and to be consistent every night. So you're kind of picking your poison. Like, what am I going with? The guy who can steal a game for me more nights than not, but every now and then has a lapse? Or, you know, the guy where if we give him solid D, he's kind of like our last defense. He's one of those guys where he's really good at what he does, but maybe not quite as elite as somebody like Barley when it comes to the physical game.
Yeah. I mean, I think when it comes to confidence, Pickard has the upper hand. I think Varley gets, he's too hard on himself sometimes, but when Varley's on it, Varley's on it. I mean, if nothing gets past him some games. Some games he looks like just a cyborg in that. I mean, it's insane. But then other games he'll be letting simple goals in that he should be stopping. I don't know. Maybe we're playing him too much. Maybe Pickard should get more starts in. I think that's an issue, and I think that maybe next season Pickard might be playing some more games.
It could be. That would be a smart move, right? I mean, especially when you look at some of the back-to-backs. Yeah. We'll see, though. We had a wacky schedule last year. I think we had more back-to-backs in a short amount of time than other teams did, where, you know, some of them had these back-to-backs but spread out throughout the year. Ours were kind of condensed, and especially with some of the travel we were doing for them, too.
Which and plus we had that early road thing where we were on the road for like a month.
Right, and that's a big deal. I mean, by the time you get used to the road, then you finally come back home. There's a bit of a letdown. I mean, especially if you're not sleeping good at night. This is so underrated, but the idea that these guys travel, they're on a plane, they hit a hotel, they're not sleeping in the same bed every night. Like, after a while, I think it really wears you out. You know, it's like if you only sleep 4 or 5 for hours a night, after a couple of weeks of that, you're literally walking around like legally drunk as far as your cognitive abilities and things like that. And I think that people don't see that with these elite athletes because they're like, oh no, these are like superheroes. So I think some of that too, I think a better schedule would certainly help.
For sure, and I do, and I think that what we saw the Avalanche this season, I think that we're going to be contending next season. I don't think there's going to be any room for disappointment from players. I don't think players like Bonnerchuk are going to be back, obviously. I even think players like Holden might even be gone, because I think it's right now. It's right now we got to start playing like we want the cup. It's right now.
And Holden too, he can still play enough to probably get something in a trade if we wanted to. I'm not saying he's going to bring back anything big, but if we were right at the edge of making a deal with somebody, we might be able to toss him in to put it over the top and get something we need. And if we don't, I think that if we play Holden in a smart and intelligent way, he can do what we need of him, but he isn't able to play above his level for more than a couple of games. It kind of cycles back down to something. Same with John Mitchell, honestly. John Mitchell can turn it on for a couple of games.
Oh my gosh.
But he can't turn it on for 10 games in a row. Or if he does, then you better expect 5-10 games after that of him kind of coming back down. He has these cycles and these waves he gets on.
John Mitchell is the biggest disappointment this season for me. Disappointing.
I really like the guy, but as far as his performance on the team, I agree. He didn't impress me much.
He was constantly turning the puck over. He was constantly falling down. I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but he would be falling down all the time. Like, I don't know what's up with that. I mean, I'm not really sure, but this, what a disappointment. I thought John Mitchell could have been a great bottom six centerman, and I still do, but I just think he had a horrible year, and I'll be surprised if he's back next season.
Yeah, I mean, how old is he? He's what, 30 something now, or is he 30 right in there somewhere?
He's around 30 right now.
So, yeah. I mean, he's probably honestly looking for one of those sunset contracts where maybe he's willing to not take as much money or, you know, keep it kind of minimal, but he wants a longer term one where he can play out his career, you know, keep his family in a nice growing town, and then after that, hang him up. Who knows? I mean, maybe this guy doesn't want to go to a new team and do the whole move the family thing again.
Yeah, and I also think that John Mitchell would be, he'd be on a team right away because teams are interested in him. I mean, obviously, if he didn't do that great with the Avalanche, I think a team maybe in the East would love a guy like John Mitchell to play third or fourth line.
Right. I mean, at that, he's really good. Yeah. Second line's where it starts to get questionable.
Yes. Yeah.
But for the Avs, there's another decision, right? You have a veteran who maybe you could come in for not too much money and still fill a role really good, or do you err on the side of saying, well, let's flip that around and go with somebody who's young, bring a guy up who's going to need a chance here in the NHL, and let's see what he can do, because you know both sides are going to make mistakes. One guy's losing a step, and the other guys just don't quite know the game and the speed of the NHL well enough, but who do you look to kind of find their way, you know, somebody who can hang on or somebody who's going to figure out the game and become a real force for you? So I think the Avs are maybe looking a little bit younger on those bottom two lines, and I think that John Mitchell's probably going to see his way out of here, actually.
Yeah, I do too. And that opens up a room for a JT Comper. So.
Right. I mean, it's interesting when you look at our players and what they played in college and in the queue and places like that, that a lot of guys come up and they don't play the same position for the Avs. And I'm curious to see if we don't address that a little bit more and let centers be centers and so on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of interested to see where Duchesne plays next season. He's great in the faceoffs, but I just think he creates more scoring opportunities playing wing when he's next to the net. I'm kind of curious to see where Wall puts him next season.
Yeah, I mean, assuming he's going to be back, right? I mean, I think that he's good, but he could be filling the Stastny thing right now. He could be, you know what? I'm not really getting the appreciation I think I deserve here, even after I took a contract that was maybe a little low for, you know, where he was at the time and all that. So I hope that his head's still in it and this is still where he wants to be, because to me, he really is kind of the heart of the Avalanche. I mean, sure, Landy's our leader, and sure, we have guys like McLeod and, you know, all these other guys who have been here for a long time, but Duchesne, I mean, he does, you know, he gets excited. Yeah. He celebrates after goals, whatever on that, by the way. And I think that he's emotional. Like, this means something to him. And for me, I want a guy like that on the team.
Oh, yes. Duchesne, I don't think wants to play for any other team. Grew up an Avs fan, wants to retire in an Avs. So, I mean, he's going to try his best to stay with the Avalanche. He scored 30 goals this year, so we're going to get a good player from him. And I just think that, you know, going from the end of last season, when Wall kind of said, called him out for that 30th goal, I just think, you know, it was frustrating for both. I mean, it was frustrating for the team that they didn't make playoffs and they were kind of in a bad situation. And I don't think Wall probably should have called them out, and I don't think Duchesne probably should have celebrated. But, I mean, we're all human here and we all make mistakes. And I think they're totally cool with each other now. And I don't think Duchesne's going unless a guy like PK Subban or Falk are coming back.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the right deal out there to be made. I just don't know if anybody's going to give us that deal. I mean, Sakic hasn't been doing this for a long time, and the only way I know about him at all and his character is what he did on the ice. But who knows? Maybe he's a ninja in the front office. Maybe he can make these deals, or maybe hanging out with Pierre Lacroix so long. Like, you know, he learned a trick or two, because you're going to need that these days. It's not the same as it used to be with money, trades, what people expect. And honestly, the talent, I mean, the drafts are good lately, but it's not as deep, it doesn't seem like to me, because there's a different kind of player and different kind of rules, and, you know, how you play the game is changed. So it's a really curious time to be a GM to start with. But, you know, I think Sakic isn't going to pull off anything amazing. I'm just hoping he doesn't do anything stupid right now.
Yeah, I mean, Sakic's kind of like a silent assassin. I mean, we all remember trade deadline. He's like, you know, no big trades will happen. And then boom, Mikhail Bodker, like the number one guy that was supposed to go at trade deadline, like, was traded to us. And I was like, wow. I was like, this dude is always constantly surprising me. So he can make a surprising move, but I don't think he has Duchesne in mind to get rid of right away. I mean, if he sees a great offer, he'll probably take it, but I don't think he's going out and asking every single team, hey, we got Duchesne. We'll take, like, basically anything. I don't think he's going to be doing that.
How do you feel about Barry? Because I think Barry has the same agent that O'Reilly did. And, you know, a lot of this, I mean, sure, it's about the player, but the agent definitely plays in. The agent has a role in whether or not these guys come back or not. And who knows if Barry's saying, take care of this for me, or if Barry's going, look, this is what I want. Get me the best deal in that scenario. So I don't know if he's coming back. I hope so, but I don't know.
We should probably pay the man. Not that much. I mean, we're nothing crazy, but I'd say let's try to re-sign Barry. Showing that he's got the offensive skills for a defenseman, he knows how to score, and if we pair him up with someone really good, Tyson Berry could be a phenomenal player. He's basically our Erik Karlsson, our mini Erik Karlsson. He's constantly going around the net, constantly pinching in on plays. I don't know. I think that any other team would give him the amount that he wants, but I don't think his intentions are to leave the Avalanche. He's friends with MacKinnon and stuff, and even though Ryan O'Reilly was friends with MacKinnon and Berry, I think Ryan O'Reilly probably wasn't happy that he didn't get the C, but it's whatever. He could go and get his $8 million in Buffalo.
Well, O'Reilly's, like we were talking about players coming in with something to prove. He always had something to prove, but then he had success, I mean, pretty quick, right? And then he kind of made a deal, didn't, but I don't know. I mean, you could kind of see the writing on the wall. As much as I didn't want to see him go, it was pretty clear he was going to go. With a guy like Barry, I think that he spent more time in our system before he got up here. And honestly, I don't think Barry was the guy everyone thought was going to make it. I think they thought Elliot would be the guy and that Barry would be an
Elliot. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, again, another cool story and a guy working it. But do you know if the NHL works at all like the NFL, where they can give people incentives? They can say, I'm going to pay you $4 million, but if you get this many points or this many assists, then you get this bonus and things like that. Is that a thing you can do in the NHL?
Yes, I think it actually applied for Panarin this year with the Blackhawks. I think it was, like 25 goals or something, we'll give you a bonus. And that's what they did. So, I mean, what they should say to Barry is, hey, we really want you back on the team, but you just got to prove it to us. Nothing bad or anything. We'll pay you some good money. But if you prove us wrong and stuff like that, and if you go out there and score goals, create opportunity, become a great player, we'll give you a bonus. And yeah, I think they'll do that.
That could be the game plan right there too, is just come to him and go, look, this isn't a low ball contract. This isn't a high one. This is pretty average for, you know, what we've been getting offered for you in trade and what we think you're worth. And then on top of that, because we believe in you, we're going to give you these bonus incentive plans. And for me, I mean, if I'm drawing that up, I'm like, look, we love the way you skate. We love the way you get that puck out of the zone, but we need you to improve your defensive game. So try to tie it in somehow there and make sure that the achievements have to do with, his defensive side of the game, because I think the rest of it's there. I mean, he can turn it on when he wants to, and he can go end to end. He can create space. I think that, you know, his downside is that every now and then that kind of gets him to turning the puck over.
He also has got this way of skating where he moves really quick, and he's a kind of explosive in his skating because he's kind of pretty low to the ice. But yeah, I think Tyson Barry is a fan favorite. I don't see the Avalanche saying, no, you could go in free agency. I don't see that happening. I see the Avalanche re-signing him and McKinnon the same day. I think, yeah, he'll probably get like, I don't see him getting more than 6 years. I think that's the ceiling. I think he'll get up to 6 years, maybe 5 years, something like that. It all depends on how much they're going to be signing guys for and what their plan is on just for the summer for like 5 years down the road.
So more than ever, I'm excited for camp. Like typically I'm always, you know, hey, hockey's coming back. Cool. I might even go see if I can catch one of the practices or locally or something. But this time around, like even before the season was over and the writing was on the wall about where that was headed, I was like, God damn, I'm ready for hockey again. I cannot wait for camp. I want to see, like, I'm more interested now than ever in the GM side of it and the front office side and what it takes to sign people and what the rules are. And I've learned so much this year that I'm just ready to get going next year. And I really want to see what some of our moves are going to turn into.
I'm super pumped next season. I'm expecting just an Avalanche team that's going to gel together and we just needed to improve the defense, maybe even improve a little bit more bottom six role. People need to stay healthy. We do that, we're going to be dangerous.
And so if we got somebody like a Radulov, I don't even know how I say it yet. But if we got him, right,
perfect.
And then we have Big Z, and then we have Varley, and we've got this kind of Russian thing going on. And the same way that you thought that maybe Griggs, getting somebody for Rantanen to play with, I mean, maybe having a core like that, maybe having these group of guys who do have that camaraderie in a certain way elevates all their games. I mean, maybe Varley actually becomes that mental ninja that he used to be in games where he was so laser focused. He was like melting the ice off people's skates and stuff. Like that guy would get that look on his face. You're like, Varley's on. Everybody knew it. Brick wall time.
Yeah, I think guys like Varley and Zadorov and Grigorenko are guys that actually look up to Radulov. I mean, Radulov he's seen as this athlete in Russia that's just phenomenal. I mean, he's a great athlete, and he's just this energy type guy. And what you hear from people are, no, he's a bad locker room influencer. No, he's going to be partying all the time. I don't think that's true at all anymore. I think when he was doing that, he was in his early 20s. He's 30 years old right now, and he actually just had a child with his wife. So I don't see him partying all the time anymore. I actually do see him being a huge locker room influence for this team, and I think he's going to be a voice in the locker room. Not as big as maybe like a Landeskog or something, but I think he'll get these Russian guys that we've got going. I think he'll be influencing them a lot and just creating opportunity on the ice, and just the players are going to be feeding off his energy because he's just a total energy type guy who scores goals.
And it means something to him, right? I mean, that energy is not just him like going, okay, I got to get this together. Like he kind of gets, I think I heard this on the BSN podcast, but he kind of gets a Forsberg attitude about a game where, you know, you pop this guy with a hit early in the game, you better watch out all game long, no matter what the score
is. Come back. Yeah.
Come into that corner with a soft shoulder because he'll reverse that check on you and drop you on your ass kind of thing. Like that's what I think we need. We have no edge. We tried to have an edge with Downey, but he had issues with Landeskog or whatever. There was some chemistry stuff there, but what we don't really have, and we don't need an agitator so much because you can kind of get that out of McLeod, although he's the classiest agitator in the league. But you know, we need a guy who just, he brings that edge to him, that sort of, you know, that air, like when he comes on the ice and he's got that certain face. Like other guys, they're just going to do their job. They're going into fight or flight mode, and hopefully they've been trained well because the next, you know, 3 minutes will be a blur, but hopefully we come out on the good side. But we don't have that yet. We have a bunch of guys who are just kind of living in this gated community that we built for them on the team. We need something to make everybody a little nervous and also a little energized, I think.
Yes, exactly. I think that's totally right. And I think having a guy like Radulov is just, it's great for the Avalanche. I mean, other teams, if they miss out on him and say Radulov signs for a good deal with us and he's explosive in the NHL, like, look who wins this at the end of the day. And I think his attitude's fine. I think he's cooled down a lot, and I think he's more about playing hockey now. But I also think he's got that edge where if the guy's going to be hitting him, he's hitting him back. Or if the guy's going to be wanting to fight him, he's going to fight him. He's a guy who's just all about the game, and he's kind of got that Ovechkin mentality where he's just, he's so much energy from him. Every goal he scores is just, it's like a celebration. And obviously you think, oh, well, you can't celebrate with Patrick Wall as your coach. That's totally not true. You don't celebrate when you're down by four goals. And even going back to Duchesne one real quick, but that wasn't even that big of a celebration. With the Radulov celebrations, they're real crazy, and just it pumps up the entire team.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of, with the Duchesne Wah thing, I know everyone's talked about this more than it should be talked about, but it kind of speaks to what had come down at that point. I mean, Duchesne was just coming back from being injured. I think he was still playing, you know, hurt, not dramatically hurt, but not 100% for sure. And 30 goals, I'm pretty sure that's, isn't that the best he's ever done? That's probably his best season, right?
That's the best he's ever done, yep.
And like I said, the guy plays, you know, with his heart on his sleeve. He's an emotion guy, so I can see where he's coming from with that. But yeah, at the same time, it's also kind of looking like, hey, I don't care about this team right now. I know it's over. I'm just worried about my personal stats, which isn't good for the team. So I can kind of see both sides of it, where Watt might be coming from, where Duchesne might be coming from. But I think, like you said, they're probably well over it and it's everybody else talking about it. But that's because it's interesting and it speaks to the psyche of the team and where they were. So I do believe that Duchesne will come back being a better leader. I think he would have anyways. I think he's, quite frankly, kind of tired of the bullshit, right? He's been around for a long time. But when you reach that threshold where you're going, you know what? I'm done with this. I am going to turn the corner. I don't care what's going on the ice. If it comes down to it, I'm going to put my nose down. I'm going to lower my shoulder with intentions, and I'm going to put the puck in the net. I think he needs more of that. I think he's been a little bit timid, a little bit too much in certain systems at times, where I think that he needs to take it a little bit more on his own shoulders sometimes.
Yeah. And, that whole story was just blown out of proportion. I mean, I listen to other podcasts that are not Avalanche involved, but every time you hear the name, you know, Patrick Wall come up, it's always negative. People are always talking negative about him, and they see him as this type of monster that we don't see. I mean, they see him as the guy who's constantly screaming at players and stuff like that, always calling players out. He doesn't do that. I feel like he's got a great connection with these players. I feel like he's there for the players when they need him. He's there for Varley when Varley needed him for that court incident. And I just think that him calling out Duchesne was being just frustration, and Duchesne knows what he did. And but also you can't be mad at Duchesne. That's 30 goals, and there was that wasn't huge hope for the Avs to make the playoffs at that time. So, but I see both points as well. Yeah.
And if you go back and you look at press conferences throughout the year, he wasn't shy to call people out. He would say, Varley's got to be better.
No.
These guys didn't show up. They didn't try. Things like that. I mean, to your point, man, he had their back at every possible opportunity. When it got towards the end, and I think in the last 10 games, we weren't even 500. It was pretty bad. The people you expect to step up and score weren't scoring and all that. You saw Walk get a little bit more frustrated. You know, he was starting to pop gray hairs out one by one. I mean, he looks like he's already served a term as president at this point. Being a coach in the NHL is not good for your health.
No, it isn't. And I think, at that point, when the Avs were already eliminated, it wasn't like, because how we play is we're usually crashing, we're constantly hitting guys, and I mean, that causes injuries to both players. So I don't think, like, right when we were out of the playoffs, I don't see if we're not going to be laying out checks and stuff like that, and just blocking shots, which we usually do. We're going to lose games. And I, as many people say, and they weren't happy with the final end result of the season. We have the 10th pick right now. And that 10th pick could be something huge, but I don't know. And just because we finished the season bad. So.
Well, we picked around there in the last couple of years, I think, right?
Mm-hmm,
what was Rantanen? Was he like 11?
He was 10th.
10th, was he? And then before that, I can't remember who it is. Yeah. I'd have to have a sheet in front of me. But
Bleakley, who went like 23rd or something.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you can get a good player all the way through the first round, really. The second round is where I don't expect much, which is why I'm surprised to see that Compher is going to be a guy coming in who could actually start on the team playing in the NHL. And he was a second round draft. And, I don't know. It's weird for me. Beyond that, I mean, it's so rare that you get into the third or the fourth or the fifth and get somebody who's worthwhile. And I know there's a couple of really notable examples of where that worked out, but it's not the norm. So for me, I'm one of those guys where I'm like, it seems like a lot of teams really kind of still value those late round picks, like load up on those and trade up as much as we can. If we can get a third rounder out of trading, a couple of fourth and fifth rounders or something like that, I would rather have the one third rounder than the couple of fourth and fifths. Like for me, you can always find somebody to play on your AHL team, but let's try to get guys who can play in the NHL and then, vet them, see what happens in the AHL instead of drafting for an AHL player.
Yeah. And, I mean, there's always possibilities for late round draft picks. Obviously they're slim, but, we actually, the Rampage signed, Boykov, who's a defenseman who actually the Avalanche drafted in sixth or seventh round, 2 years ago. So, and I've heard pretty good stuff from him, from the AHL report. And, I mean, he's a possibility for the future. Obviously it's doubtful he'll be a full-time NHL player, but, I mean, there's always a possibility you get a guy in the late rounds, but going back to what you said, I'd rather have a guy in like the third or fourth round because this is a bigger possibility he'll make the NHL.
Right. Yeah. And especially coming off of, we fired our head scout a year or two back, whatever. And like, we're not really showing a good history right now with scouting anyway. So let's play the numbers in this case. Let's actually use the stats and go, look, past the first and second round, we're not getting much that's useful. So let's just trade everything we have in those later rounds to get up there. I mean, I think that's a good move right now. And then later on, when you've been like, we're on a roll, we're drafting guys like crazy, and I spotted this guy in the sixth round who has a lot of hope, that's when you make that move, I think. So I don't know. I mean, this is the school of NHL 2016 GM mode for me. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about outside of that, but it seems logical.
It's logical and it makes sense. I'd love to be in a room when the GMs are making phone calls. That'd be awesome.
Like, yeah, fly on the wall for all that stuff would be great, wouldn't it? I would love to just be in a room like when Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh sit down and go, you know what? We're going to have to talk to Tangs. I mean, we brought him here and now we're going to let him go. Yeah. The second time he's been let go, like, did they sit in there and do rock, paper, scissors to go? You tell him. No, you tell him. It's such a crazy thing. Just, those situations, I'd love to be a fly on the wall for those.
Yeah, and for that situation, I think it was pretty difficult for them to say it. But I also heard a rumor that Tange kind of wanted out to finish the year kind of strong. But I don't know. That could be totally untrue.
Yeah, I mean, what do we know, right? I mean, really, the closest I get are some of those, like, the credentialed people's podcasts, like BSN. Most of those guys are credentialed, and they actually speak to the players, and they're around it. So that's as close as I get, but that's still interpretation, and that's still guys who don't always agree. And if you listen to their podcast, often they're, actually, every single thing they say is, like, a disagreement. Like, one guy goes, well, I really think it's this, and then AJ will be like, nah, I think you're wrong. I think it's this. And it makes for a really good podcast. But even at that level, with that knowledge and with that exposure they have to them, they don't really know. Their guesses are better than ours.
The only people that know are as management. They could just take a great guess and I get some right, but as management at the end of the day knows what they're doing.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's their job is to make those crucial decisions. So I think that they're not always so sure either. I think sometimes they're like, this is the best I got. This is my best answer right now. God, I hope it's right.
Yeah.
So I know you got things to do, but I wanted to touch on just a couple more things before you go. One, and we'll do it because we've been talking about it, is like, what do you do in the off season? What podcasts are you listening to, or what are you doing to keep track of the game, hockey, and the Avs? I know that the playoffs are on right now, and that's the next thing we're going to talk about. But like, what's your exposure, man? I know you said you listen to the BSN podcast.
Yes,
you've been on my BSN podcast a handful of times, so you have to listen to it every now and then.
Yes, I'm subscribed and. I also listen to Marek Burst-Wyshynski. I don't know if you've heard them.
So I see them on Twitter all the time, and I should check them out. But there's something about them that makes me go, are these guys going to piss me off? Am I going to like listen to these guys and be ready to go?
They'll piss you off, yes. Sometimes they talk about trying to punch Patrick Waugh in the face, and I'm like, okay, let's relax here. But they also argue about some good topics, and I mean, it's very rare when they talk about the Avalanche, but they do rip on them sometimes, but they're a pretty good hockey podcast. Another one would probably be, I kind of enjoy the Steve Dangle podcast. I don't know if you've heard of him.
It sounds really familiar, but Dangle in the hockey world always does. So tell me about this.
Steve Dangle, these are just a couple Canadian kids that are they talk, they're huge Leafs fans, so they talk about the Leafs a lot, or also they cover just all around NHL stuff. And, but they also have like personal stuff they talk about. That's pretty funny. It's a pretty entertaining podcast.
I don't know if you get this or not, but here locally, Kyle Keefe and Vic Lombardi, I think that's how you say his name, they have a radio show, which is stupid. I mean, go on about this for a long time, but to me, like, sure, do a radio show, but then make it available as a podcast, because I'm not going to find your channel in the middle of the day while I'm doing other things to listen to this, as great as it is. Yeah. And it's been really entertaining. They just had Rycroft on too, which took it to a new level. But at the end of the day, man, I want to dial this up at midnight when I'm, you know, shutting down the day. I'm going to go play my hockey game. Who knows?
Exactly.
Maybe I'm drinking.
Yeah.
That's why I want that in my ears. So as good as that is, I think they're still missing the boat, and hopefully they get it together. I know there's some weirdness with rights and radio stations and recording things, but that would be one that if anybody's willing to like stop their day and check something out, you should totally check that out. And I think you could probably get it on the internet if you want to check it out.
Yeah, I probably could. Yeah, I'll totally look that out. And just another one that I listen to is the Fourth Line podcast. It's pretty funny. I like some of the stuff they talk about. They have a guy on there, Carl, who's an Avalanche fan.
That's cool. So here locally, one of them, I think it's the Avs podcast. I can't remember the guy's name who does it, but they just posted did their, what was it, 100th?
Yeah, 100th episode. It's been like the first one in like 5 months or something.
Yeah. So again, I like these guys. I mean, it's not quite the approach I'm taking, but I like what they do. They do a very long format thing. It's definitely kind of thought out and bullet pointed and so on. And, you know, I like what they do, but like you said, it doesn't come out very often, and it's clearly a big production for them. So, you know, and then I'm on the flip side of that, where I'm putting out things that are 2 and 3 minutes long, but that's just how I can make it happen. But I like that too. Yeah. That's a good one.
It's just giving someone something to listen to. Like sometimes when you post like the 5 minute ones, I'm like, oh sweet, I have like a 6 minute drive back home, so I'll just pop it on. Perfect.
Yeah. And they're silly. You don't have to pay attention too hard. Lately, I've been making fun of all the sensationalism that happens with the media and hockey and things like that. And so I have this thing very Onion inspired, like Onion Radio. I don't know if you've heard that or not, but they're being
something
ridiculous.
Like satire.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's funny. It's a spoof. There's nothing serious about it. It's meant to make you giggle, which is kind of the core of everything I do. If it's not funny, it's really not fun at all. So, and then we have podcasts like this where we get a little bit more serious, but still it's just a conversation. So I like it, man. I like having you on too.
Yeah.
You're very real with what you do. So let me ask you this.
I like coming on the show.
How is your bracket right now? Or do you have a bracket for the playoffs?
Oh my gosh.
Is it blown up right now? Because some things happened I didn't expect.
I had the Kings going all the way. I had the Blackhawks getting pretty far. I had the, who else did I have? Oh, I had the Panthers trying to get far, and just, I don't even want to look at my bracket anymore. It's ruined.
How do you feel about Minnesota and Dallas? Did that turn out the way you wanted?
I did think Dallas would get the job done, but I think Minnesota put up a pretty good fight, and I do not think Dallas is going to go that far in the playoffs. Look at that goaltending. That goaltending is giving up way too many goals.
And when you put it up against Brian Elliott, I mean, that's where they're facing next, I think, is the Blues.
The Blues just beat the Blackhawks, who are Stanley Cup winners. And that's really hard to do. Even though the Hawks lost some guys over the summer, they still gained some guys at trade deadline. And they were a dangerous team. And I think the Blues could be pretty dangerous. But also, again, there's a little part of me that's like, I don't want to see Paul Stastny go to the Stanley Cup. I mean, I can't see that.
You know, I'm both ways on that. I'm totally a flip flopper because sometimes I'm like, you know, screw you, whatever, man. How dare you go to another team?
Yeah, exactly. Screw him.
And then sometimes I'm like, okay, well, if it was me, maybe I would have done that too. I mean, maybe he made a really kind of a bold and kind of brave move. You know, he's like, you know what? I've been here pretty much my whole hockey life, from DU to the Avs, and here's an opportunity. Here's, you know, a chance for me to go and kind of start over and be that guy.
Paid.
And I don't think he really was that guy, to tell you the truth. He wasn't horrible, but I don't think he played at the money that he got. I think that he played under the money for sure.
He's got one assist so far this playoffs, which is not great. And the only problem I had with Paul Stastny is I do think his intentions were to sign with St. Louis, and we didn't get anything back for it. We could have traded his rights at the deadline. Obviously, we probably wouldn't have, but we could have. And I just think we could have got something for Stastny, but he went elsewhere, and pretty disappointing. He disappointed the team, I think.
Yep, and this is like we talked about the guy coming out of college who decided to be a free agent. I can't remember his name again, but you know, same sort of thing. Like
Jimmy Vesey.
Yeah, it almost seems like there's a certain loyalty that doesn't exist in the hockey world, or at least not to the level it used to, which, you know, again, on one side, you're like, you know, good for them. These guys got to go out there and get their own because they're disposable. As soon as they're not playing good enough, they're going to get traded, sent down, or just let go altogether. So get what you can while you can. And the other side, you're like, but that kind of takes away from the team game side of it, right? Like you see somebody like DeMarcus Ware, he's a Bronco player, who's taking a pay cut to stay on this team because he still believes in the team. I mean, so it's both sides of that. And I don't know. I think it's different than it used to be. But again, to all the things we talked about, it's you have to be a different player right now. The officiating's different. The rules are changing left and right. The league's expanding. There's so many things to consider that you kind of have to go after your own thing.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of want players that want to stay around. So you want players like that. And this Paul Stastny wanted to make more money somewhere else and play in St. Louis, and that's up to him. So, I mean, I don't want to see him go to the Stanley Cup Finals, but I'm not totally pissed off at him.
Right. And, you know, at the time, there was Stastny, O'Reilly, and Duchesne, who you could all these guys, you could argue that, you know, all of them were trying to be the guy, and two of them left, and one of them still here. So that's why I'm kind of hoping that Duchesne sort of honors that, too, and that he's not trying to jump ship anywhere. At the same time, I hope the Avs don't trade him.
No. What's also pretty frustrating is when you remember when the Flames gave Ryan O'Reilly his money and then we matched it, so we got Ryan O'Reilly back.
Yep.
If they would have signed Ryan O'Reilly, we would have got their first round pick, which ended up being Sean Monahan. So that kind of hurts.
It does. It's so weird when you look at the different draft years and you're like, oh, one pick this way, one pick that way. Again, like you give out your best option, or you do what you think is best, but we haven't been right a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, another crazy pick. The pick we traded, the first round pick we traded to Washington for Semyon Varlamov, ended up being Philip Forsberg.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I think that they looked at that. Actually, this is bullshit, but I think that, you know, a Forsberg, you just can't do that again. That's like another Elway signing with Broncos. Can't happen. That's probably not true.
Yeah, that was.
I'm being silly, but, you know.
Yeah, it's all good. And plus, like, the Forsberg, they messed up because they traded Philip Forsberg for Martin Erat, who ended up leaving the NHL a year later. So that must haunt them in their sleep.
Telling you, man, being a GM, being a coach, it'll make you gray for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, so let's talk a couple matchups before we wrap this up. Who do you have between the Islanders and the Bolts?
I'm going to go with the Lightning if Steven Stamkos is back, which he actually returned to the ice today, this morning.
I think I saw he was practicing, yeah. I think so, too. I don't know, the two really kind of polarizing figures on Stamkos and
Tavares, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, two guys who they kind of speak to the whole leader role to me, and you never know. If they're on your team, there's always a chance, but I think Tampa Bay. So, Capitals and Penguins.
I'm going to go with Capitals this time. I actually, at the beginning of the year, I had Capitals going all the way, but I switched to at the end because I thought the Kings would do better. And I also thought the Caps were going to not really do that great in the playoffs, but I think the Caps are going to beat the Penguins and maybe in six games.
So Rangers and Flyers, who do you think is a better team there? Because if you look at it, the Caps won it in six, whereas the Penguins won it in five. So is that just two different, you know, quality teams, or are the Penguins on a roll? Because it seems like they're picking it up.
Let's go Penguins.
Yeah? You think so? You think Crosby's going to get his mojo back together?
Oh, wait. Isn't it Penguins versus Capitals?
Yeah. So I was saying earlier, though, if you look at who they played previously, the Capitals won it in six, and they were playing the Flyers, and then New York won it, or New York lost it in five. So I was just saying, like, you know, if you look at those two teams, the Capitals and the Penguins, how they won and how many games it took, like, who's coming into this with more momentum? And to me, that's the most intriguing matchup of them all, right? I mean, we'll see who San Jose is going to play. We know that the Blues are taking on Dallas, and I think I know how that goes. And then we talked about the Islanders and Tampa Bay. But when it comes to the Capitals and the Penguins, man, I think that right there is what everybody's going to be looking at for probably the Cup champion.
Yeah, it's the battle of Ovechkin and Crosby again. That's going to be a great series. I'm going to probably watch every game.
Yeah, I'm not tired of that battle at all. I'm all for it. Cool, man. So remind people where they can find you and what you're up to these days, and then we'll wrap this thing up.
You can find me on Twitter at Richard Powell, Richard and then P-O-L and then 95. We try to do Basement Boys hockey podcast recently, but we recorded a 2-hour-long episode, which deleted, and so it was just a total letdown. But this summer, we plan on doing some episodes, probably for draft day and I don't know. So find Basement Boys. Just type in BB Hockey Talk on Twitter. You'll find us. And you follow me, I'll follow you back on Twitter.
That's awesome, man. And I totally do follow you, by the way. I'm excited for the podcast to come back, but I'm always excited to have you on, too. I really like the way your brain works.
I know. I was
cool thoughts.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, so I'll put all your stuff in the show notes, and then we'll do it again soon.
All right, man. I'll see you soon.
He is Richard Pollock, and all of his info is available at coloradohockey.com in the show notes for this episode, along with links to other podcasts that we talked about, topics we talked about, and some other gems just mixed in there. This and every other podcast that we do, including podcasts from Dan Price, DJ Triplett, Ed Burkholder, and many of the media types here in Colorado, are available at coloradohockey.com. Just go there and check it out. You can also subscribe to the podcast through iTunes by clicking on the button that says Get It on iTunes, or just go to iTunes and search for Colorado Hockey. This podcast is brought to you by ABSFAM, ABSFAM, for the coolest hockey shirts you can't find anywhere else because they're not available anywhere else. Go check them out. The Dutchie, the Landy, the EJ, the Pix, the Vari, the Skilly, the Mac. There's so many there. Go check them all out. They're really cool. And early May Dutchie hats, the real deal, coming your way. Stay awesome.